The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. That interesting time between Enlightenment Day and New Year's, it was a sort of breathtaking hiatus, which is a, you know. So I'm going to talk about a little bit in the scripture of Brahma's net, with which some of us are very familiar and some not. This is the scripture from which our precepts are taken. And it's really beautiful. We read the precepts part of it, alternating with the Chogyakarmon and commentary that Reverend Master did, different aspects of the precepts. But there's something about the scripture which is, well, there's a lot about the scripture which is really huge, big, beautiful, but not intimidating. And after all the foundations of training have been explained, all the nourishing attitudes and commitments and all that, and after all the precepts have been elucidated and explained, then we have this lovely section at the end, which just explains the great joy of taking the precepts, reading them, and keeping to them. And it says, you know, all of you who have accepted and keep to the precepts, accept and keep to them and read them aloud, understand them, and expound them and write them down. Keep to the precepts, make them your blood and bones, so that all sentient beings may ever turn around in their hearts and see the thousand Buddhas. It's not just for us, it's for everybody. And now this little bit. These thousand Buddhas stretch out their hands to us, so that birth after birth, we will not fall into some lower state of existence, but will be reborn always as humans or amongst the devas. I've sort of curtailed it slightly because it's long. But these thousand Buddhas, that sentient beings may turn around in their hearts and see the thousand Buddhas, you think, whoa. Most of us don't see Buddhas. A few people do, most of us don't. And actually it doesn't matter whether we see Buddhas or not, because what matters is what we do, how we live. That we turn around in our hearts, that's important. To turn around in our hearts, turning towards the Buddha and look up. We may not see Buddhas, but we know they're there. If we keep turning around in our hearts and recognizing the help, this is the thing. The Buddhas are constantly stretching out the hands to us to help us, and we don't always recognize it. Because sometimes the help is in some different form from what we would like or expect or hope for or think. There's this lovely story that Reverend Master used to tell us, I'm sure most of you know about. The man with his house is flooded, the huge flood, all the houses are flooded. And the flood comes higher and higher. And he climbs up onto his roof and prays to God, please help me, rescue me from this flood. Help, help. And sometime after that, there comes a man in a boat saying, come on, get in the boat. We're going now. And he says, no, God will rescue me. I'm all right. And then a little later, I say, okay, and they go away. A little later, a helicopter comes by to let down a rope to pick him up. And, get on, you know, hold fire, take this. No, 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 God will rescue me. And after a little bit of back and forth, they say, okay. And he drowns, and he gets up to heaven and says to God, why didn't you rescue me? And God says, well, I sent you a boat and a helicopter. What more did you want? You know, because he couldn't recognize the help that was offered. He was expecting the Archangel Michael or somebody to come and rescue him in some dramatic way. He got a boat and a helicopter, perfectly sufficient, but he wanted something else. Very nice little story. And it makes a nice point, actually, that help doesn't always come quite quite the way we'd like it. Sometimes it's not quite so simple. This is the darkest time of the year. And as Rav Master Scholastica was saying last week, you know, in this part of the world it's dark and cold. In the southern hemisphere it's warm and light. They celebrate Christmas on the beach in Australia. And to us that seems odd, so because we're so used to it being dark and cold at Christmas. But there's always the same amount of sunlight on the earth. If you're going to be picky, you could say, well, there is the eclipse of the moon. But apart from that, there's always the same amount of sunlight somewhere on the earth. It's just not always where we can see it. But we tend to think our little slice is the whole of it, and we forget that somewhere else it's hot and sunny, or it's completely different. We see our own little bit and think that's the whole picture. And of course it isn't. It's the balance, the light and the dark. It all is Buddha nature shining in all beings is what it comes down to. Sometimes we see it, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we're training in the dark, sometimes it's more apparent. But it's just the dark and the light. For many of us this year, there have been major changes. Some people you've known and loved have died. Some people are facing death. Some people are making a huge change, having a huge upheaval. Some are facing illness. This is always the case, but this year it seems to be a lot of it somehow. Maybe it's because we're all getting a little older and we see more of it. But it's always the case that there's change. And still, amidst these changes, the thousand Buddhas are stretching out their hands to us. And amidst all the turmoil in life, all the things that we face, all the seemingly overwhelming problems, those thousand Buddhas are always there, stretching out their hands to us. And we just need to trust that. And remember the thousand Buddhas. Look up, turn around in our heart, and see them, i.e. recognize the help we're given. We have to stretch out our own hands and accept the help that's offered to us. Otherwise, they can't quite meet. We have to do our part. Stretch out our own hand, recognize the help, have faith in it, trust in it, and practice it. Not wanting something else. Not saying, oh, that's not what I want. I want a helicopter, or I want an angel to come and rescue me, or something, you know. To not insisting on our own terms, but willing to accept the help that is offered. It's not always dramatic. Usually it's not. Sometimes it's very subtle help. Sometimes we simply get through the night. It doesn't mean our sickness necessarily goes away, for instance, or that we can't bring back somebody who has died, obviously. But we may have the strength to bear it. We may find in ourselves patience and wisdom and strength to bear something. That's the help. It's like that story of Kisakatami and the mustard seed. You know, the Buddha doesn't bring back her dead child. Her child has died and she's desperate and distraught. She doesn't really recognize that it's died. And he says, go to every house in the village and ask each one, if there's no one who has died in their house, ask them to give you a mustard seed. And of course she goes from house to house. And in every house, somebody has died. And she finally gets the point. Everybody has death and sorrow in their life. And that's the medicine. It's not anything to do with mustard seeds. It is the acceptance of death. That's the help. It's not something dramatic like bring my child back to life or cure it. It's much better help, actually. And she becomes an arahant. Finding the strength to bear suffering and learn patience within it. Our dark state of mind may not miraculously lift, but you might find we can sit still beneath it and not be completely swallowed up in it. Because then we can see it in perspective and we know it comes and goes on this sort of river of life. Everything comes and goes. Nothing is stuck there forever. We can turn towards the 1,000 Buddhas. And we can ask for help directly. Please help me. Please help me to find patience. Please help me with this situation. Not necessarily, please take it away and may everything be all right, but help me to bear it. Help me to find peace within it. Help me to learn wisdom and kindness and strength. Doing our best in our training really helps at dark times. In this beautiful discourse about the precepts, right after this part about the 1,000 Buddhas, it says, "It is now up to you to practice these precepts wholeheartedly and to put them into practice joyfully." To practice wholeheartedly and joyfully doesn't mean we're happy all the time. But it's up to us. We practice the precepts, we practice stillness, we train ourselves wholeheartedly and joyfully, meaning we give our whole heart to it. And by doing that, there is joy because it's what the heart really wants to do. To sit still, to keep to the precepts, even when things are really difficult, even when other people seem to be not keeping to the precepts, giving us a really hard time. There's a joy within that, within just doing our very best and not giving up. Doesn't mean our problems go away, but we can, it can help us to find peace and acceptance within all those things, with whatever is going on, just simply doing our best in our practice, turning the heart towards the Buddha in faith. Please help me with this situation. This opportunity we have, that we all have, to practice the Dharma, is rare and precious indeed, never to be taken for granted. How has it come about? Here we all are, hearing the Dharma, sitting here together. We can put it into practice. We have the precepts. We have the ability to sit still and meditate. It's wonderful. It's rare. It's never to be taken for granted. It's up to us to make the most of it. And also, never to undervalue the merit of our training, thinking it's not good enough. I've got all these faults. I'm not very good at meditation. I make all these mistakes. I've made horrible blunders. I've hurt people. I've broken the precept. You know, we do make mistakes. We do fall down. We do break the precepts. And still, within all that, the 1,000 Buddhas stretch out their hands to us and help us if we let them. This means letting go of our self-judgment. Oh, I'm not good enough. They won't help me. I've made horrible mistakes. I'm unworthy. No. Have a little compassion for ourselves. I need help. No matter what I think I may have done or what I have done, I need help. Please help me. And to let the 1,000 Buddhas help us, to stretch out our own hand back up and grab on, as it were. Learning from our mistakes rather than beating ourselves over the head with them. You know, we all make mistakes. Okay, what did I do? Well, that was dumb. Ah, maybe I can do something better next time. Let it go. Learn. Keep going. Easier said than done. Some of us routinely beat ourselves up horribly. Far longer than we would beat up anybody else if we did that at all. You know, to treat ourselves with kindness that we might offer to another person would be nice. Just never underestimate the strength of our practice, the value and the strength of it. Just one moment of meditation has huge benefits, says Dogen. Just a little moment of, you know, absent-minded, upside-down, topsy-turvy meditation that's not very good, it helps immeasurably. We have no idea how much benefit that brings to ourselves and others. But just to trust it, to trust that it is so. To have faith in that. And we keep on making our best effort. Keep on doing our best to do better, not coasting along on our merit. Oh, I've done okay. Sooner or later, our merit dries up and we're aground in our little boat on some sandbank. Just keep up our effort. Let the water keep flowing. Carry us along. The benefits of training. This scripture has a list of 5 types of benefits to doing our best to keep to the precepts. The bright-minded person who is strong in patience, equanimity, and wisdom, and can keep to teachings such as these, easily obtains 5 types of benefits, even before reaching the rank of Buddha. The bright-minded person, well, we might run aground right there and think, well, I'm not a bright-minded person, I'm miserable, I'm having a horrible time, I despair about our despair, and, you know, but it's just our view. It's just our view of ourselves, it's not the reality. We're training, for crying out loud. Here we are doing our best. We're not an unbright-minded person because we're doing our best to practice. We're trying to overcome these dark states of mind. And they do lift. Sometimes it's really slow. But we just keep training, working away at those dark states of mind, the heavy states, which can seem like they're just stuck there. But as I always say, we're actually moving. It just seems like we're not, because the fog sort of seems like it's stuck around us. But in fact, we're working through it. We just don't see that. We all have dark habits of mind, dark states, to one degree or another. But just to trust that we can work on them and that they will lighten, or they do lighten, even if slowly, we can look back and see, well, better than it was a couple of years ago, you know. They don't last as long. They're not quite as deep or quite as convincing. And sometimes they really do seem to be so. And yet, experience has shown that we can get through them. The 1,000 Buddhas will help us. They are there. This is where being strong in patience comes in. Strong in patience with our states of mind, with our own foibles and failings, weaknesses. Equanimity, practicing equanimity, not getting all excited when we feel happy, or all excited when we feel miserable. You know, oh, here I am having a terrible state of mind. Oh, it's awful, awful, worse than anybody else's could ever be. We all have dark states of mind, and sometimes it's kind of like grey, which is almost worse, just grey and endless, and sometimes it's really black. But they still come and go. They don't last forever. And to see things in perspective, not getting all cast down and despairing about our despair or miserable about our misery, but to see these come and go. This is wisdom. Not to get stuck with how we think of ourselves, to be strong in patience, equanimity, and wisdom. There's got a lot of wisdom in just that little couple of lines. And keeping to teachings such as these, keeping to the precepts as best we can, doing our best, not being perfect, but doing our best, then we have these benefits. First, the Buddhas of all the 10 quarters look upon us with sympathy and ever protect us. He says him, but we mean us. This is us, it's not somebody else, it's us. They look upon us with sympathy and ever protect us. Even just our attempt to train ourselves to keep to the precepts as best we can, the Buddhas will help us. Those 1,000 Buddhas do stretch out their hands to us and protect us. Look upon us with sympathy more than we would look upon ourselves. Do we have sympathy for ourselves? We may have sympathy for others, but can we have sympathy for ourselves without being, it's not a pity party, it's just, you know, it's been tough. Just keep doing my best. Second, at the end of our life, we will see clearly and our heart will fill with joy. We don't have to be afraid of dying. We don't have to worry, actually. At the end of our life, we will see clearly to trust that, and our heart will fill with joy. We don't know how that's going to be. It may not be quite how we'd think, but I think if we can just trust that, just entrust ourselves to the Buddha when our time comes, and not think it's going to be something we expect, and then get all worried when it's different, but just to entrust ourselves to Buddha nature, and trust ourselves to those thousand Buddhas, we will see clearly and our heart will fill with joy. But not to expect anything in particular, just to trust. Third, in all future lives, we will be friend to all bodhisattvas. We will have the opportunity to meet people who will help us, to meet beings that will see us on our way, help us. Fourth, we will garner innumerable merits through our perfecting the precepts within ourselves. Doesn't mean we have to be perfect, just that we do our best. Perfecting something doesn't mean it's perfect. It means we keep working at it. We keep training ourselves in the precepts, training ourselves in kindness, in wisdom. Innumerable merits, but we don't think, oh great, innumerable merits, I will take it and I can put my feet up. We just keep doing our practice because we're not expecting all this stuff, you know. But it's nice to think about it, and that is, maybe it's better than we think it might be. Fifth, in this and later lives, our wisdom and happiness from keeping to the pure precepts will be full and complete, such as the disciple of the Buddha. Well, you couldn't do much better than that. And we may not keep to the precepts perfectly. We may not train ourselves perfectly. We may have our dark states of mind keep coming back. We may have fear of death or fear of sickness and all these things that come up. We don't deal with it all perfectly. We don't immediately, you know, leap into the arms of the Buddha and say, okay, that's it. It's an ongoing thing. We keep working at it. And yet, the merit of our training is vast, much bigger than we can imagine. And to trust that, if we can do just a little bit of this, well, then we'll get great merits. And we don't train ourselves in order to get benefits. We don't keep to the precepts in order to get something. We do it because it's good to do. So we read about these benefits, we're encouraged, and then we close the book and get on with our practice. We don't keep thinking, ooh, it would be nice. We just do the training. But it doesn't hurt, now and then, to be a little encouraged that our training brings benefits to ourselves and other beings, more than we can imagine. And, as I said, we don't do it for that. We're not trying to get something. We do it because it's good to do. We train because it's good to train. We keep to the precepts because it's good to do, because it's what the heart wants to do, not because we're going to get something. Because I think it'll be quite different from what we think, however it may be. These benefits can be completely different from what we imagine. The help of the Buddhas comes in totally different ways from what we might think, and not always comfortable, sometimes quite uncomfortable. And yet we trust that help, and we trust the benefits without worrying about them. As I said, we're not trying to be perfect. We're not trying to measure up to some impossible standard. And then suddenly we'll get all these blessings. The blessings come along with the training in quiet ways. They come along with the difficulties. Having the difficulty is sometimes a very blessing because it turns our attention to something else. We learn patience and kindness, maybe. We learn strength and sympathy with other beings in the midst of a sickness or a difficulty. And that's the blessing, maybe, not some kind of cake at the end of it, you know. Sometimes it seems we have nothing but problems, overwhelming difficulties, grief, But if we keep practicing faith, turning to the Buddha, doing our best to sit still and keep to the precepts as best we can, then we can know there's light within the darkness, and it's not just dark. It's just darkness. It doesn't last forever. We need darkness. Light goes with darkness, as the sequence does, steps in walking. It seems to be part of our human condition that we need both light and darkness. We can't have just one and never the other. I don't think anybody has darkness absolutely all the time. And nobody certainly has light absolutely all the time. Otherwise, you wouldn't know one without the other. You have to have both to know light and darkness. And as I said, this is the darkest time of the year for us. And the days are already getting longer. We just don't see it yet. But they're getting longer. So let's remember the 1,000 Buddhas stretching out their hands to us at this dark time of the year. Stretching out their hands to us and all beings, other beings too. They're not just stretching out the hands to the good people. We aren't us. They're never us. We're always the bad people somehow. The good people get the benefit. You know, other people are the ones that Buddhas want and stretch out their hands to. This is miserable little me. You know, there are always some other people. But in fact, the Buddhas are stretching out their hands to all of us. One of the most important lines in this whole beautiful scripture is, do not cultivate discriminative thoughts. I always read that kind of strongly when we read the precepts. Do not cultivate discriminative thoughts. It's so important, and it comes out throughout the whole scripture. All the foundations of training, all those loving, nourishing attitudes and things, those who read it, you keep coming across this thing. Do not discriminate between this and that. The judgmental, discriminating mind is always coming back to that. Do not cultivate discriminative thoughts. Well, if we're not supposed to do that, probably the Buddhas aren't doing it either. So they're not cultivating discriminative thoughts. They're not thinking, well, this is a good person. I think I'll stretch out my hand to that one, but them over there, no. You know, I don't think so. I think they stretch out their hands to all of us, no matter what we may think of ourselves or what we may have got ourselves into or what somebody else may think of us. The Buddhas stretch out their hands to all of us. They're not discriminating about good and bad people, the worthy and the unworthy. They stretch out their hands to all of us without worrying. They simply do it. And just we just need to let go of our ideas about ourselves. Our views of who we are, our views of our states of mind or the things we've done or things that have happened or whatever it might be. Just to let go of all that for a moment. Turn towards the Buddha and stretch out our hands in return. And then we can meet. And that will really help. And that's our talk for the day. Thank you.